Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to the program. This is Speak Up for Monday, May 1st. It is May Day, the international day to celebrate labor in everywhere except North America. It's also, holy moly, that means we're really deep into spring and summer is just around the corner. If you're out on Saturday, you know that feeling because it was a fabulous, beautiful day. On Saturday, the first real, I think, hot day we've had, well, probably since the last hot day way back in the early fall. It's nice to have it here already. My name's Magnus. I'm your host for the next hour of Speak Up, and we have some good stuff coming up for you. We're going to talk a little bit about Burnaby happenings and a programming update about that for this program. We have our Looking at Lyme feature for today. And we'll also be bringing you one of our documentary on generosity. So that'll be some fun stuff. Plus the weather and bird note and lots of other stuff. First up, though, let's have a little music. This is an English band, which is sort of really broken into awareness and charted really well across Canada just recently with their new album. The band is called Black Country New Road, and they have an album out called Live at Bush Hall. This is Upsong.
Together, BC.
Thank you very much for coming out tonight. Congratulations, everyone. We made it to the end of the year. Happy prom night. Woo! This is an unconventional gig of ours that we
That was Black Country New Road from their album Live at Bush Song, and that was Up Song. You're listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Usually, since the new year, practically, for the last 3 months, we've been doing a regular feature here on the Monday Speak Up program called What's Up in Burnaby, a partnership with our friends at the Burnaby Beacon, which is a Burnaby news site. Unfortunately, some changes are happening at the Beacon, and the staff there has been downsized. So Shrishti Gangdev, who's been joining me every Monday to talk about important events and things happening in Burnaby, is not able to do that anymore. And we're going to have to end that particular segment, at least for the time being. I'm going to do some, I just heard about that last week. And that's unfortunate. I think the Burnaby Beacon's been doing good work. The Beacon isn't going away, but there are going to be some changes. I'm not sure what they are, but, you know, up until this point, it's had a couple dedicated staff person, people, a couple dedicated reporters working on reporting and telling Burnaby-specific stories, which is something important, and one of the reasons we were really happy to be partnering with them, because it was really great to be able to talk about those things happening right here in our local community where CJSF is located. We are, of course, up here on top of the mountain at Simon Fraser University. So that's going to be changing, and as I say, I'm going to see if I can't find a new partnership and maybe bring back something very similar to keep you, our listeners, up to date on what's happening in your community. And we're going to hopefully spread that to some of the other surrounding communities, Tri-Cities and whatnot as well. So unfortunately, no more for the time being, What's Up with Burnaby. But that doesn't mean we can't talk about what's happening in Burnaby all the same. This week, or last week, Burnaby Council voted to introduce caste as a protected category within Burnaby. Caste is a system that comes from South Asian culture in India and Pakistan and Bangladesh, which organizes it pretty much everybody in society into a sort of hierarchical order of castes or groups. Which are arranged at a hierarchy from low to high, the Brahmins being the top caste and untouchables, of which there's a couple different subcastes within that sort of category. Well, untouchables isn't really an official caste, but it is sort of the bottom rung on the hierarchy. And it's a system that you're born into. It's a hereditary system. You and your family are part of a particular caste, and when you are born, you remain part of that caste. And it can be quite... One of the things, I think, for those of us who aren't part of the South Asian community is, in many ways, it's quite invisible. You don't really see or have a real awareness of it. I know, I have friends, and I know many people and encounter many people of South Asian heritage, through my work and through the rest of my life. And, you know, in ordinary circumstances, you really have no awareness of caste and what impact it has on people's on life here. But it does have significance. And as you can imagine, a system in which people are rated based on their family heritage or you know, a system is patently unfair. So Burnaby Council has voted to introduce or to list caste as a protected category, which would make any kind of discrimination based on cast in any Burnaby activities. I don't know if against the law is quite the right word, but something that people are protected from. And if you can show that you've someone who's missed an opportunity or been prevented from accessing resources or services or any of that kind of thing based on caste, they'd have a reason for complaint and an avenue that they could get redress. This is something that's happening in a number of communities, and probably at some point there will be action taken at the provincial and federal levels. Human rights councils have also recognized the need for caste to be a protected category that can't be discriminated for. So kudos to Burnaby Council for acting on this. Another thing Burnaby Council is doing, and I've talked about this on the show before as part of our What's Up in Burnaby segment, is Burnaby is entered into a process leading to an apology to Chinese Canadians. We've heard about all sorts of things like the Chinese head tax, that created discrimination against people from China moving to Canada back in the early part of the last century, and that prevented family unification, and it was particularly harsh because many of the people who had come over from China as immigrants early on were single men who came over to work in a variety of different jobs where labor was needed or their labor was needed. And then through the head tax, they were prevented from bringing their families over so that there was family separation for years and years. And so we've heard about those kind of things at the sort of larger level. But cities and municipalities are one of the most direct ways in which people actually interact with government. And city governments have a huge impact on people's lives because they're the closest level of government to people. And one of the things that's really good about this initiative on the city of Burnaby is that it shines a light on some of the historic injustices that were committed against the Chinese community. Everything from restrictions on accessing things like recreation facilities, restrictive zoning covenants that enacting policies that were actually proposed by local branches of the KKK. And you might be surprised that, well, obviously the KKK never had the presence or importance here on this side of the border as it did in many parts of the United States. There were local chapters, and shockingly, they could get an ear of local government. And so Burnaby is they're not just doing an apology. They're actually going through a whole process of researching and documenting all these issues that will be brought to light, which I think is really important that we know this history. And then that will finally culminate in an apology. And I'm hoping to have an interview with both a councillor from Burnaby Council and the staff person who's working on this project for the city. And I'm hoping we'll have them on next week to talk about this initiative. It was launched a couple months ago in February. And we'll get an update both on where it's at and what is it revealing, and what's the purpose of going through this this step, which is both symbolic but also real in terms of its importance. Other things happening in Burnaby: Rev's Bowling, which is in the Brentwood neighborhood, just off Lougheed Highway, a long established Burnaby recreation spot. I've been there bowling a number of times myself. That land has been slated for redevelopment. The land has been sold, and a development permit has been put in to put another one of those giant towers that are going up in Brentwood. If you're not passing through that area often, it's kind of astonishing because they are big towers. We're not talking like 10 stories, 15 stories, 20 stories. These are like 50-story towers. They're huge. But anyway, that Revs Bowling is going to be closing down, and the land will be redeveloped for condos. We all know housing is a problem here in Vancouver in general, and the need for more supply is really important, with many people moving to the community and many people coming to Canada, and the population growth that comes from that. But it really is sad to see these long-established places that have are going to have so much importance to so many lives, you know, growing up here in Burnaby and going, you know, throughout your childhood, going to, you know, places like that for recreation, for fun, for birthday parties, for family celebrations. And unfortunately, they don't always come back. Sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't, which is say, you know, that's a really important kind of, and landmark's not the right word, but, you know, an important spot for many people in Burnaby, where they spent a lot of time, and now it's going to close down. And is another bowling alley going to open up somewhere? Maybe, maybe not. It's not quite the same, you know, revenue generator as a giant condo development. And of course, it's one of those kinds of places that requires a special kind of place, like a special kind of facility. You can't just sort of go and rent a spot any old place to put in a bowling alley. And does it make sense when you're building a new development to create a space that could be a bowling alley, a really big space? So as land prices go up, a lot of these kinds of spaces become no longer economic, both to continue operating, as we can see, that it becomes replaced by something that generates a much higher return. But does it become economic to create new spaces, new facilities of that type? And where, if where do you have people have to go to get that? Anyway, an interesting development. If you got more, if you have Burnaby stories you'd like to share, I'd love to hear them. You can hit me up here at CJSF with an email. I'm the station manager as well as hosting this show, so you can find my email on our website at cjsf.ca. I would love to hear from you. Another story we're following up on and hoping to have an interview on for next week is the issue of rerouted flight routes from Vancouver International Airport. New routes proposed by NAV Canada are going to be have planes routed over North Burnaby, and not everyone in Burnaby is happy about that. And a petition has been started by some local residents, and some of them actually have some real expertise in the area. They're not just upset about it, but they have some real reasons why they're not sure this is a good idea. And I'm hoping to have that person on the show next week as well. So tune in on Monday for those two. They're not quite nailed down yet, but it's a whole week. I got lots of time to get that set up. And hopefully we'll be hearing from that. All right, let's do some quick weather, tell you what's coming up, and then we will be getting into our first feature of the program. So it's a nice mixed, kind of a mix of weather for today. Chance of showers throughout the day, high up to 16. Tomorrow is looking pretty nice, but not so hot as it was on the weekend. It'll be clear, but only up to highs up to 17. Wednesday, the clouds start coming in, so it's a mix of sun and cloud, high up to 18. And then the rest of the week is the clouds are back. So clouds on Thursday, shifting into clouds and rain Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That's your forecast for Burnaby and Vancouver for this week. So make your plans accordingly. All right. Here is our feature from looking at Lyme, and let's have it. Sorry, I'm just sort of trying to look at it here. Okay, yeah, let's give it a go. This is Looking at Lyme featuring Dr. Annie Hooper.
When animals are threatened with danger, the limbic system plays a vital role in keeping us alive. When the limbic system is impaired, a cascade of problems can arise, leading to symptoms that can manifest as chronic illness. So how would one go about healing? I have found an amazing expert to answer our questions. I love people with curious minds, and Annie Hopper is most definitely one of them. Her determination led to the creation of the Dynamic Neural Retraining System, or DNRS. She's also the author of Wired for Healing, Remapping the Brain to Recover from Chronic and Mysterious Illnesses. We're delighted to speak with Annie and find out more about limbic system impairment and retraining the brain. Welcome, Annie, to our podcast.
Oh, thank you, Sarah, for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
How did you become involved in your work of retraining the brain?
Well, that's a really great question. And really, my entryway into the world of brain retraining and neuroplasticity was through my own suffering. My journey began in 2004. And at the time, I was a core belief counselor and journalist in Kelowna, BC. And my life was absolutely thriving. But looking back at it, I can see that I experienced what I call the perfect storm for developing limbic system impairment. And what I mean by that was, you know, various different toxic traumas that might affect brain function. So one of those was I had exposure to various toxins. So when I moved to Kelowna, there was a big wildfire. I don't know if you remember that, mm-hmm. but a huge wildfire. So there was a dark black smoke, wildfire smoke in the air for a few weeks. So that was definitely part of the exposure piece. But I also worked in an office that was a very old building. And unfortunately, that building had mold in it. And also, what they didn't tell me when I rented the office is that my office was located right next to the janitor supply room. And I actually shared a wall with the janitor supply room, and I didn't have proper ventilation in that office. So I had a lot of exposures at once. So the smoke, the mold, the chemicals, the industrial chemical cleaners from the janitor supply room, and also, you know, when I opened my office, I painted it and put in new furniture.
Oh, and I had
no idea, like everybody does, right? And you know, I'm totally being exposed to all these VOCs that are off-gassing from new products and new materials. So, I was working in that office for about 5 months, and over that time, I started to get symptoms. But I'll go back to the perfect storm again for a second. So
Sure. Prior
to actually renting that office space, about 6 months earlier, I was in a car accident. And it wasn't that the impact of the car accident was that great, but it left me with cervical whiplash and a neurological shake in my neck that almost mimicked Parkinson's. And it was really strange. And I went to all kinds of specialists, and they couldn't figure it out. Looking back at that, so you have toxic exposure from smoke, mold, chemicals, VOCs, plus a physical injury in my neck. And also, if I look back even further than that, I had a history of trauma growing up in childhood with an alcoholic father. So I think the protective circuits in my brain were firing just a little bit more rapidly than the average child.
Yes.
Because, you know, I felt unsafe a lot of the time. So I think it was that combination of traumas that actually led to limbic system impairment. So, you know, when I was looking at the symptoms that I was having at the time, first of all, it started as chronic joint and muscle pain. Eventually, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, but of course, the diagnosis didn't help me any. It was just a label to put on, the symptoms.
Yep.
But as I'm sure a lot of your listeners will relate to.
I think a lot of our listeners are probably relating to many components of your story.
Oh, good, good. The other symptoms that I had constant muscle twitching, constant headaches that just would not go away. I was suffering from insomnia, anxiety, and then I started to develop this sensitivity to chemicals. And it didn't really dawn on me at the time that my sense of smell was changing. My favorite saying used to be, that stinks. Can't you smell that? I was like, oh my goodness. And it things that I used to enjoy, like perfume or, bubble bath or any kind of things, scented products were suddenly smelling like toxic bug spray. And it literally felt like I was being poisoned by my environment. And that started to get worse and worse. And the only thing that I could do at the time was really isolate myself as much as I could from having the exposures. And of course, that led to a lot of avoidance behaviors because I was really just trying to protect my health. Now, as you can imagine, along the way, I saw endless healthcare practitioners. I mean, all really well-intended people who were trying to help me.
Right.
And I saw lots of doctors and healthcare providers and people in mainstream medicine, alternative medicine, and beyond. And believe me when I tell you, I was an obedient patient. You know, at the time, the theory was heavy metal toxicity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the recommendation was to detox. Well, I detoxed to Mars and back, and it didn't help.
Right.
And no matter who I went to see, you know, I did the treatments religiously. And regardless of what it was, whether it was changes in diet or changes in, chelation or detoxification or supplements or what have you, or, you know, psychology work and counseling work and whatever it is, you know, up the woohoo, I tried it and to Mars and back. And although some things seemed to help temporarily, I would always slingshot back into a cycle of chronic illness. And I was baffled. I was like, oh my goodness, the best specialists in the world that mm-hmm. I know of are obviously not figuring this out.
And what are they missing?
there is something missing. And unfortunately, as my symptoms got worse, and not only would I slingshot back into a cycle of chronic illness, but the symptoms were actually getting worse. So at this point, I've got fibromyalgia, chemical sensitivities, anxiety, depression. And, you know, the anxiety and depression, I don't think were there to begin with. I think it was a side effect of living your life that way. And uh-huh. of course, you know, when you're in chronic illness for that long, it's going to change the brain function and you're going to see anxiety and depression come up as well. But anyway, back to getting worse. So, what happened is, eventually, I developed electric hypersensitivity syndrome, which I didn't even know existed. So what that meant was I started to become sensitive to electromagnetic fields that are found in things like cell phones and wireless and your computer and your electrical appliances. And I could only describe it as living a science fiction nightmare. That's really the only way to describe it. I could no longer just be in my own home because everything around me, I was starting to react to EMF.